Welcome one, welcome all. This is the Next Step Radio Show on the Antimatter Radio Zone Network. I am your host, Jacob Appleman. The website for the show, gofindtheothers.com. That is gofindtheothers.com. You don't even need the three W's. Just type it in there and off you go. If you would like to find us on Blog Talk, the Antimatter Zone Network, if you just put in three W's, antimatterzonenetwork.com, that'll take you straight to the Blog Talk channel. There you'll find Jeffrey Grupp with his work in Antimatter Radio and also Zen Flower Poetry Radio. You will find Ed Walker from blackhelicopterradio.com and also Bob from Cincinnati chimed in with a show the other night on Manly P. Hall and Magic. It's fantastic stuff. All those guys are doing a great job, and after you're done listening to this, check out some of their shows. It's been a few weeks since episode 27. In the meantime, I have put together a new website, like I mentioned, gofindtheothers.com, to reflect a bit of a shift in focus. Lots of people in the truth movement do their very best to educate and awaken the others, which I find a noble cause. I have a smidge of a different approach. What I want to do is reach out to those who are already awake and devise some sort of aim or purpose in a direction to what we do now with this knowledge and information. In my quest to go find the others, the recent events in Japan with the earthquake, tsunami, and subsequent problems at the Fukushima nuclear reactor plant, I had noticed such a wide range in reporting about the situation that I find it schizophrenic. It's almost impossible to nail down exactly what's going on from the disparity in reports ranging from one extreme to the other. So with my quest to go find the others, I found one of the others in Japan, and I sat down and had a conversation with him about his take, what's going on there. You know, he's live and local, so he has very little vested interest in propaganda or fear-mongering or selling radiation pills. His focus is, of course, himself and his family. So I thought that would be a good place to start in finding out what in the world is going on in Japan. Our special guest today is Thomas Malone. He's originally from Montana, and in his mid-20s, following a martial arts career, moved to Japan and has been there for over 20 years. He has a fantastic talk show on Blog Talk also. If you got to Blog Talk's website, did a search for Thomas Malone, Touchstone Tom, or Grok the Talk, any of those terms should get you to his fantastic work. And honestly, one of the best broadcasts out there. So I thought he would be the perfect person to sit down and have this conversation. And we talk about all things Japan, the projects he's working on with his broadcast. And I hope you find it enlightening. And no, this is not an April Fool's joke. This is the real deal. So I hope you enjoy. The music we heard up front is a song called Kodo by the Yoshida Brothers. And before we get into the interview, we're going to have a few words from our good friend Talam Macy and a piece of his called Yearning. Directly after Talam Macy's enlightening words, we will jump right into the interview and have Thomas Malone give us a little bit about his situation, who he is, where he came from, and then we get into the current situation in Japan. Thank you all for listening. We'll see you next time.
The place from whence I write is wrong if your third eye is closed. And the blind suppose that I'm evil because the people can't see the furthest from smoking trees. And I hope their needs are met as I step up my writing, but still deal with the walking dead. After all, communication ain't what I thought you heard. Communication is what you thought I said. So where your mind at now? From the time I sat down, you should have known that I was zoning. Homie only came to speak truth to power. And my motto is ignore these cowards. I mean, why should I stand up until he man up? Because if I stand up for no reason, I guarantee you it's going to be studio thug hunting season. I place that on everything I believe in. I only want to be understood. And I write like what's hood, but who's the most ghetto is not the point. The point is my integrity, and if I'm profound, why should I dumb it down? Let the A&R give them the runaround. I only came to walk 180. I do this for the art, not to drop Mercedes. I write it for the same reason Coltrane did it. To cipher in a graveyard with a 40-inch cigar and a cat in a gray wave cap be like, yo, Black came with it. And I put out my cigar, put a little drink on the grave, tell them brothers I call you God, cause calling you begin to be like calling you slave. And you have to understand your concept of God is deeper than that slave master's. I mean, how he gonna have a bastard and put him out on the plantation and call him his property? See, we bigger than this poverty. We can make a project staircase seem more beautiful than any room in the mayor's place. Ask anyone. We even majestic when we walk down the street. Our feet pivot hip-hop beats deep into the pavement. And still wink like, shorty, how your day went? They try to give us short, so all day long we stay bent. I mean, why be broke when you can make sense and pay rent? If you could write like this, your life might switch. But let me slow down. Tell Doodle Burnett Tombstone to throw me another 40 while I sit down at the foot of this tree, relax and relight my This is far above inconvenient truths. The fact is I'm not afraid to die. And because so many people are afraid to live, that might be the reason why they just getting by. But me, I embrace my demons and I bring them everywhere I go. And we check in the motels and get faded and fight and fuck. But I rarely introduce them to anyone I know because I know that the smell of burning leaves is not provocative. Besides, who wants to see giant brown trees covered in thorny vines that climb like ivy, half visible beyond blue fog, totally masking the image of a man on his knees, screaming, it is me, God, please take me now, because I'm surrounded by people who believe that my words can make them happy, when I don't know a damn thing about joy. But if you ever wish for the pretense to convince this world that your every breath isn't hemorrhaging yearning, then whenever you see me, ask me how.
Well, let's see. This is Thomas Malone. I am known on the radio as Touchstone Tom. I've been here in Japan for 23 years, exactly half of my life, 23 years in Montana and then 23 years here in the rural countryside of Japan. Here in Japan, I've studied Aikido and Kendo, which is a sword fighting. I'm the first licensed Kyatsu doctor that's not Japanese, and the first non-Japanese to teach Aikido at Tohei Sensei's dojo. And he is the world's only Judan, or 10-degree black belt in Aikido. He's a direct descendant of Morihei Ueshiba, who founded Aikido. And now I just teach English out of my house to make a living, and I'm doing a radio show called Grok the Talk, which I do basically every week, interviewing people for about 2 hours at a shot. Jacob, what do you want to go into first?
Okay, yeah, let's talk about, and since hindsight is always 20/20, mm-hmm. Let's go a little bit before the actual event. As far as now that we look back on it, so people can learn as we move into, you know, Earth changes and, mm-hmm. and however one wants to describe that. Looking back on it now, could you sense something was coming? I mean, everybody feels change in the air generally, but was there anything different about the time leading up to what happened?
Now, that's a great question, because the 4 or 5 days before the event, this happened on a Friday, and I remember on Tuesday, I was really starting to feel these incredible energies, and I wasn't sure if it was because of the work I'm doing with John Lash in the Planetary Tantra and connecting into these earth energies or what it was, but I was writing mails to everybody, talking to everybody, saying this something's weird going on. I can't sleep. I'm just filled with an incredible energy. And Dr. Wood was saying that her cat, she has two cats, and one of the cats was just totally wild, like jumping in her lap and just scratching her and staying on her the whole time for 4 days. And so I definitely knew something was up, but I didn't connect it in my mind to an earthquake. I just knew something was wrong. So there was definitely something in the air going up to it.
Right. So and it's going to be difficult because I feel, through empirical evidence mostly, that lots of earth changes are coming. You know, though we didn't experience a
earthquake and a tsunami here locally, we did go between snowstorm and 60 degrees in these wild fluctuations here in the middle of the country, which isn't odd. It snowed in the spring here before, and it's been very nice and pleasant in the spring for, but we haven't had this, you know, 60 degree day, then snowy day, then 60 degree. Yeah. So these earth changes are all around, and mm-hmm. and when these subtleties rise to the surface, you know, not that we can pinpoint exactly what's happening, excuse me, or what's coming, but if we're in tune enough to know that these subtle changes are there, then, you know, being prepared or, you know, at least having our minds right, you know, is a good way to, you know, help us approach whatever that's coming is coming. It could be, you know, a few hiccups here, or it could be a gigantic growth spurt. We're not really sure. But it's always important to, I think, instead of focus directly on the horror and, you know, all the negativity in events like this, but to also find out, you know, how we can better brace for the next one, because I doubt that was the last earthquake that will rise to the surface, regardless of the origin. So you felt obviously some subtle energy changes up to the event. Mm-hmm. You know, as much as you feel comfortable, let's talk about what happened, you know,
sure.
during the
event. The actual event.
And let's talk about, you know, where you are in Japan in relation to Sendai and, you know, the major damage areas.
Sure. I'm basically halfway between Tokyo and the nuclear power plant. So I'm right in between those two. I'm about 120 kilometers north of Tokyo and about 100 kilometers south of Fukushima, that part of Fukushima. It's actually the neighboring prefecture. So we can get into the radiation a bit later, but I think it's a non-issue. But yeah, so I'm very close to where the epicenter was, which is just off the coast of Sendai, or off the coast of Miyagi. And it was about 2:45 in the afternoon. I was in my second floor of my house here, and I was laughing my ass off to a Charlie Sheen video on YouTube. I was just rolling on the ground, literally laughing in tears. So when the thing started rolling around and the actual house started rocking and rolling, I'm like, wait a minute, is this really happening? Or am I laughing? What's going on here? And when the laughter settled down, I realized I was in the middle of a big earthquake. And I'm like, oh, boy. Ran over and turned off the gas that I had on my coffee and was planning to get out the door. But by the time I started walking or moving towards the door, plates are falling. Everything's crashing all around me. And I just grabbed a hold of a pillar near the staircase and just held on to it. And, you know, you have to remember this went on for 6 minutes, which is a really long time when you're actually being shook around like that. And my heart rate didn't go up. I'm like, okay, I'm just going to enjoy this and see what happens, because, you know, I'm probably going to die. So I might as well be wide awake for the actual event that I've been, you know, pondering about since I was 10 years old. And I also had a thought of, why am I just standing here so quiet and so, you know, not screaming or anything? And I suddenly yelled out, Kali, you know, stop it, in this really loud voice. You know, Kali, one of the earth energies, one of the angry earth energies. And nothing happened. So I'm like, wait a minute, okay, I got to, Sophia, I'll call her name Sophia. And I called out Sophia and yelled at her to stop it. And there was a little bit of a lessening in the shaking. I'm like, oh, good, she's listening to me. And then it started up again even more violently, and I realized I had to use the name that she does respond to now. And I screamed out at her saying, you know, why are you trying to kill me? If you kill me, you're strangling your own neck, you know? Why would you do this to someone who's dedicated to you like this? And as soon as I said that, the thing just stopped. It was like she just turned around and said, oh, you're right, here we go, boom, and it just stopped. I then ran out of the house and ran to, I think, about 12 houses in the neighborhood as fast as I could, and, you know, knocked on the doors and said, you guys are okay? You're all right? Okay, boom, off to the next place. You know, daijoubu desu ka? Keiga nai desu ka? You have no injuries. And I just went around the whole place checking on everybody and came across a wall that had fallen down in the road. And they're like all these heavy 12 to 20 kilogram bricks and blocks. And I swear in 20 seconds, I'd put them all back to where they were, just filled with this incredible, incredible fun energy. And then went around meeting people. And once I knew they were safe, I just went into laughing fits. It was the strangest reaction. I'm sure people thought I was absolutely crazy.
Now, in your 23 years there, had you been through an earthquake before?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, countless times. We have them all the time, but never one, of course, even near this scale. This was just outrageous. Just outrageous. It felt like you're standing, levitating above the mouth of an open dragon that's roaring at its full might. I mean, it's just, it's impossible to explain how much energy is brought forth in these events. Unbelievable.
Because it's not just the physical shaking of the ground. There's actual energy releases.
Yeah.
Like if you're in front of a speaker bank at a huge concert, not only can you hear it, you can kind of feel the sound coming at you. Is it like that times, a bazillion?
Times 100. I mean, it's just, you really just feel like the whole world is just going to break up into little pieces of glass and just disappear. I mean, really, that's how you feel. It's like there was no doubt in my mind that this was the end of the world. I mean, obviously it was. It's the weirdest thing. And then a few hours later, everything's back somewhat to normal, and it's a wonderful feeling. I mean, people are united. People work together. That's what we can talk about a lot is how Japan has reacted, because they brought me to tears probably, 10 times since this has happened, just thinking about how incredible they are. There's no panic here, no looting, no stealing, no freaking out of anybody. If anything, people are more friendly even than they were before. You know, it's like, okay, this is the emergency time. We got to work together. You see people waiting in line for gasoline for 4 hours patiently. Nobody cutting in front of anyone. Nobody's fingering anyone else. It's just, these people are so incredibly intelligent and tuned into things that I'm sorry to say it, but they're the most intelligent people on the planet as far as I'm concerned.
So now let's talk about, okay, so you've checked on everybody in the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. The energy's subsiding. It's kind of hysterical. Let's talk, because there's this whole prevalent fake video, real video, hyperbole that goes on for people at a distance. Let's talk about what, now obviously a tsunami did hit Sendai, mostly was the epicenter of most of the water damage.
Right.
What are some realities of that situation? Body count isn't necessary, but there's obviously lots of property damage and loss of life.
Yeah.
So that part isn't fake, because I actually have run across stories.
Oh,
that this was CGI, and there's some movie and the other thing I wanted to ask is, there's apparently a dam of some kind in Sendai that was inland. Is that necessarily true that broke and added a bunch of water from inland to the shore?
I wouldn't doubt it. I hadn't heard that, but that's very possible. Oh, yeah, the damage by the tsunami and the actual quaking of the earth itself is just, it's outrageous. I mean, it's huge. I mean, there's whole villages that are gone. Not one person survived, some of these smaller villages that are near the coast. And I think that is what people need to focus on. And, right now we need to get food up to those people that are stranded, people that are in evacuation centers that haven't really had any good food for, over 2 weeks. No gasoline. No, of course, no electricity. That's kind of the pressing thing. And it's a hell. It's just a hellhole up there. It's just unbelievable. I might actually be going up there either tomorrow or the next day to take with some other people here to take some trucks of stuff, of donated food and blankets and stuff up there. So that'll be exciting.
So there's obviously a massive with the relief effort. And let me mention this just as a side note.
Mm-hmm.
I used to work in a delivery capacity. And my position took me in and out of a couple chains of grocery stores. It was like 14 different ones per day. And when Katrina hit, before they got water and food to the actual people that needed it, the Red Cross managed to get donation buckets at every checkout stand in all 14 of these stores that I went in and out of. And I thought, wow, they did they have those under the counter ready to go? You know, I'm not anti-charity. You know, I don't like these big, you know, global conglomerate charities because the money tends to get lost along the way.
That's right.
But I've noticed here, I haven't seen, and I don't want to say any, but very, very, very little of that push you usually get to, you know, donate to disaster relief. Do you think that's a function of the fact that, you know, they're on it, so to speak, or worsening the situation economically might be of benefit to somebody in the aftermath?
Yeah, yeah. It's difficult to say which way to go on that. It could be, like you say, that much of this is not as bad as it's being reported. So in a sense, maybe the Japanese government and related industries have it under control. Or yeah, like you say, it could be the other way, that it's hoping that the economy here will worsen for some people to benefit from. You know, that's it could go either way. I would personally say that the former is probably the more likely explanation, because I don't really see how a very powerful party out there would be able to benefit much from Japan going down. I don't know. I don't see it that way. If it was, I think they'd be going after, you know, Tokyo. If we're getting into a man-made thing, why would they attack, you know, the northern area where there's not a lot of industry and things?
And so what is that area? It's basically agriculture and some power stations. Is that the thrust of the economy in the hardest hit region?
Yeah, it's agriculture. Some of the more prominent agriculture and even just standard universities are located up in Sendai. One of the, you know, most famous universities here is Tohoku Daigaku, which is in Sendai. And a lot of agriculture and, you know, fishing harbors and things like that. It's not a lot of high tech stuff.
So where are these the nuclear plants?
They're in Fukushima. Yeah, they're on the coast there, on the Pacific coast in Fukushima.
And that's its own prefecture.
That's right.
Okay.
That's right.
And so let's kind of talk about the timeline in regards to that. Now, obviously, these are electrical power plants that are fueled by nuclear reactions. Mm-hmm. You know, over here, I've already heard that thousands of these rods were in the attic, for lack of a better word, that when the hydrogen steam explosion sent all this radiation into the air, and things are glowing in Nova Scotia already. That's the worst case scenario thing I've heard. All the way down to, you know, things are hot, but not yet outrageous. So where's kind of some reality in those?
Sure. I'll tell you, we should be looking at this totally opposite of the way it's being presented. Instead of this being an incredible catastrophe in regard to the nuclear power plants, we should be saying, wow, this is wonderful. The things survived without melting down and without causing huge amounts of radiation to be leaked, even though it was hit by, you know, the biggest earthquake at least in Japanese history, and probably one of the greatest in world history. They survived. I mean, we should be jumping up and down for joy, saying, my God, if it survived the worst thing that can happen, I think we can kind of settle down on worrying about smaller disasters. So, you know, I'm just not understanding it. So I can only talk from my experience. I can't get in anybody else's head or from anybody else's perspective.
Right.
But what I'm seeing from here is that there's absolutely not a single person I've met in the 2.5 weeks following this that's panicked, that's worried. And a lot of these people are highly trained technicians. One of my students is a particle accelerator designer for Toshiba, which is actually closer to the plants than I am. He's 20 kilometers closer. And I asked him about the radiation levels, because they have Geiger meters there at his company that are even better than the government's. And he says the reading, what was it, 2 days ago, was 0.36 micro C-bells. You know, and I said, okay, well, what does that mean? Does that, what would be a danger zone? And he says, oh, we'd start worrying when they got to 100.
Right.
You know, it's 100 compared to 0.36. And when I showed him some of the reports coming out of America, you know, like Alex Jones and these people are saying everybody's going to die and they're going to blow up and it's a meltdown. This is a mild-mannered technician. He spit his coffee out. He laughed so hard. He's like, what? You're joking. Is this a parody? I said, no, this is what the media is presenting. And he just couldn't believe it. So that's the way that people are seeing it here and the way the government's talking about it and TEPCO's talking about it is it's finished. It's no problem. Everything's under control. So everybody shut up.
So this student of yours who he's living closer to the actual power plant itself, mm-hmm. His vested interest in finding out the actual radiation is one that's so personal, you know, yeah. It would make your head spin. He's yeah. not trying to sell a magazine or a podcast.
Yeah.
He wants to know for his very survival, just like what's for dinner and where do I sleep at night.
And his newly born baby. Yeah, he has a 6-month-old baby, you know.
And he's technical and highly skilled, and he's measured it, and it's 97.7% away from even being worrisome.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's actually 99.7.
Oh, yeah, okay.
74, yeah. I mean, geez, it's just ridiculous, you know. It's just ridiculous. Well, and the other thing is, you know, Jacob, that we're not seeing a single elite, so-called elite whether they're a politician or a movie star or just, you know, enterprise venturing rich guy here. Nobody's leaving the country. Everybody's here, staying here. You'd know those people would have the inside track if there's sitting in their backyard is a nuclear meltdown. Nobody's leaving.
Absolutely.
So I really hope that the Western media will just shut the crap up because I'm getting sick of seeing it every day and people basically just lying, you know, just making up numbers and saying it's a million times more. Well, what's a million times more? Maybe if you jump into the plant and swim in the water for an hour or two, you might not come out too good. But, you know, most of us aren't going swimming up there. So I really wish people would just knock it off.
I saw another report of yellow particles raining from the sky. Now,
pollen. Yeah.
Correct.
That happens every year, you know.
as a country boy myself, I've seen you know, many a trees blow some neat looking pollen around, but
yeah,
I don't think, you know, and you've heard of yellow cake uranium, but
yeah,
I don't think it would even come down as a yellow powder if that were the case anyway. So yeah, I've noticed a definite agenda, regardless of the situation, to implant this fear meme, you know, no matter what, to kind of propel this thing. You know, it's almost like somebody wants everybody in a total state of panic nonstop, you know, regardless. So it's refreshing to hear that, you know, people who live in and around the vicinity are doing their best to study it. And it's not like they think it's, you know, absolutely no big deal. Everything's fine. They're on it. You know, they're measuring radiation. They're absolutely paying attention. So it's definitely focused on in a rational way. And it's glad to hear that the local people, you know, don't take, you know, Benjamin Fulford to use example.
Oh, man. If I hear one more person tell me I should get out of Japan because of Benjamin Fulford's information, I swear to God, I'm going to go bop him on the head. I'm just not taking it anymore. That guy's I'll say it, you know, he's a liar. He should be in a mental institution. He hasn't said one thing that's come true. He's had, you know, aliens pulled out of his spine. You know, he's had interviews with Rockefeller and, you know, asked not a single challenging question in the interview and then cuts in this side rant that he puts in a couple days later, frothing at the mouth, saying how he's going to kill Rockefeller, you know. But, you know, 2 days before, he's had it, sits down next to him and has an interview and gets a two-shot picture with him, like he's standing next to Mickey Mouse, you know.
Right.
The guy is just, it's just one lie after another, period. So everybody just please pull the plug on Benjamin. I don't want to hear about him anymore.
And yeah, and I wonder how also some people rise, for lack of a better word, to the surface in these situations and seem to, you know, I didn't look to Benjamin Fulford as the expert on all things Japanese, you know, March 1st.
Yeah.
So a week and a half later, he's all of a sudden the go-to guy. And I wonder how that happens sometimes. It doesn't seem organic to me.
It's really strange. It's like he's been planted here to be the automatic spokesman, you know. I mean, he says that a ninja came into his window, and he's a Freemason ninja, which I don't know where the hell he came up with that. Leaves him a badge on his table, a Freemason badge, and says, "Join us or we'll kill you. And if you join us, we'll make you the Prime Minister of Finance." Oh, come on. Come on, people. You know? And then the next day, the red and the greens come in through the window and say, "Well, we heard about a ninja coming to attack you, but we'll protect you because you awoken us. We woke up the Chinese people to the Illuminati." You think they needed this guy who doesn't footnote anything in his books to wake them up to a threat? I mean, come on. Well, how does anybody even begin to believe this nonsense?
It's baffling because the mainstream, they pull some tall tales from now, time to time.
Yeah.
But that doesn't exempt the alternative media also.
Yeah, exactly.
And just because, this Fulford guy doesn't work for NBC, it doesn't necessarily give him any more or less credo because I've had, basically since this September 11th, kind of a new shift in my focus from, doing my best to wake everybody up. I refine that because I see how fruitless, those efforts can be.
Yeah.
Into, finding the others, as my website states.
Yeah, I like that.
That are, already there. So when this happened, I see all this craziness. But the solution, as we move through this media circus, is to go find the others. Find out who's in the vicinity. And, it's kind of that simple. Just ask him, is this thing, are you glowing in the dark yet? No? Okay, good. So this guy says people are glowing in the dark, so we can just discount the rest of his reporting. Yep. And that way you don't have to, sift through lies and disinformation. Yep. You're a family guy. I'm sure if things were dire, the parental side of you would have got out of the area. So, you're still there. So I can only assume that, it's not 70,000 times higher than normal levels of radiation. So it's...
Yeah, absolutely not. We'd be, like my son says, my 16-year-old boy says that, if these are really 72,000 times the levels of Hiroshima, like they're saying it is, we'd be dead.
Right.
Instead of having a really cool, fun time. I'm out playing off in the mountains every day. It's kind of cool that I've lost a lot of income from people who have no gasoline. It's like, fine, give me a few months to just go out and play. I don't have to work every day like I have been. It's cool. I'm having a great time. And a lot of Japanese are too. A lot of these companies are closed for a few weeks or even a few months, some of the big ones like Honda and stuff. And so the guys that have been working every day, for 20, 30 years, they're out riding bicycles and playing with their family. And it's really not too bad.
A little bit of a respite. And I've also learned this through personal tragedies as well as, the macrocosm of, earth changes or political upheavals, that a lot of times built into these tragedies are basically blank canvas for, like my profile picture, the beginning is near.
Exactly.
There's opportunity to be found in every tragedy to do things better, start them over, refine technique, things like that. So I'm glad to hear that, a lot of locals aren't, jumping off cliffs and that, hey, the Honda plant shut down. Oh, woe is me. No, this is now a week I can spend with my children and get some exercise. So that's fantastic to hear that also. Now let's talk about a little bit, we've kind of narrowed down the truth of the hype, the event itself. Let me ask you one more question about Sendai.
Sure.
Without sounding too coarse, is anything left? Is this something that's going to have to be physically relocated or is you know, the water subsided and things being kind of put back together, if it's possible.
Well, a lot of the places on the coast that were destroyed, and the reason there's so much debris, a lot of the debris that's that was washed up and then, you know, scraped back out, was because a lot of these coastal areas were actually reclamation lands, or these artificial islands that they'd built out of, you know, old scrap cars and, you know, all that. So it was real loose ground that they were standing on anyway. So, yeah, there's whole areas that are just gone. I mean, it's unbelievable. So, yeah, that part has not been exaggerated. If anything, that part hasn't been focused on enough. It's really ugly.
So there's basically, you know, like a focus to move that stuff farther inland, or to shore up some of the man-made terrain there, or is it just still too muddy, for lack of a better word, to deal with right yet?
I think first it's going to take just a huge cleanup effort of probably 2 or 3 years just to be able to even know what they can do. But, you know, as sad as the loss of life is, obviously, I mean, everybody knows that. It's probably up to, you know, when everything's said and done, it's probably going to be over 60,000 people. Could even be 70,000. But, you know, it is, you know, in Japanese, the Chinese character for a crisis is kiki. And it's two kanji, or two characters. One is ki, which is for danger, and one is a ki for opportunity. Which, you know, often, you often hear people comment on that, that it's, you know, where there's this incredible emergency situations that occur, out of that, there's a new chance to go in a different direction, like you just said. So even the language reflects that as well. And, you know, after World War II, the Japanese were devastated much worse than they are in comparison with this catastrophe. And we know what they did in less than a decade after that. You know, and these don't get the Japanese fired up, because you won't be able to stop them once you do.
And
it took atomic bombs to stop them in World War II, or they would have taken over the whole friggin' world, you know.
And just as a quick side tangent, we didn't discuss this in the pre-talk, but I've always wondered, and I've seen pictures of you know, Nagasaki and Hiroshima, you know, of present day, and everybody knows about, you know, World War II. You know, even the firebombing of Tokyo and just the sheer devastation.
Yeah.
You know, and that does seem like ancient history to a lot of younger people, but that wasn't that long ago, no. You know, in the grand scheme of things. And it's a slight miracle that those cities have been rebuilt. You know, they're not, you know, just barren wastelands.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, my first question would be, you know, some people speculate that those necessarily weren't nuclear weapons, that it may have been some kind of a fuel air bomb or something that just made a... Because, one, is that true, or is it, two, just the, you know, the tragedy brings people closer together, you know, to the nth degree, that it got rebuilt so quick? How did they go... I mean, because if you look at pictures of Nagasaki and Hiroshima today, I would have never, you know, Detroit.
They're beautiful.
Right. Detroit's in far worse shape. And, you know,
that
city appears to have been nuked. But, you know, is that, do you think there's any validity to the fact that those maybe weren't nuclear weapons, just some mother of all bomb?
I don't think so. I think those are definitely atomic bombs, because there's some real strange anomalies there, you know, like, have you heard these about shadows that are burnt into walls?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean,
whoa, what is going on there? That's something very strange happened. You know, there's stories of fire tornadoes that were moving around almost consciously, or not almost, but moving around as if they were alive, like stopping and chasing down people and crossing rivers in unison, you know, 9 of these things lining up by a river and then charging across the river. I mean, there's some weird things that happened.
9? Did you just say 9?
Yeah, yeah. Nine fiery tornadoes that lined up across a river, and people escaped through the river, and they thought that, well, we're safe now. And they saw these fire tornadoes line up on the cross bank there, and suddenly just charge across the river at them. You know, obviously, they survived, but I mean, there were some really strange things that happened. People had said they were transported into another universe and lived a whole life and then came back during this, you know, those few seconds when the bomb's exploding above them. I mean, there's some really strange things that went on. So,
and then, so in a generation and a half, two generations, see, because in America, and you used to live here, you know, the ego or the nationalistic, you know, egocentrism, you know, it's outrageous. And, I'm glad in a bizarre way to hear that that actually did happen.
Right.
Because when you see what the Japanese people have done since, I mean, because literally Tokyo was destroyed. Nagasaki was destroyed. Hiroshima was destroyed. And, you know, and from the 50s until, you know, in just 50 years, not only did they put it back together, you know, but they're, you know, one of the world's leading exporters, you know, innovation, technology. It's well, at the very least, says something tremendous about the people themselves.
Yeah.
And how maybe, you know, America isn't the, a shining jewel that, we're trained to believe. Because like I said, I'd often wondered if maybe those weapons didn't go off, or if they did, the fact they put it back together bigger and better, that's just simply remarkable.
That's just how the Japanese operate. You know, they just truly are amazing people. And in 1995 was the big Kobe Hanshin earthquake. And everybody, even the Japanese themselves, thought this was going to take, you know, 15, 20 years to rebuild Kobe back to where it was. 5 years after it, it was already built back better than it was, you know, before the earthquake happened. And that's one of the most beautiful cities in Japan. You would never even know there was an earthquake there.
Huh.
You know, 5,000 people were killed in that, you know.
Well,
they just shock me, Jacob. They just blow my mind. I just, I've been in love with these people forever, but this earthquake has just jumped that up by 100-fold, you know.
Right.
And literally that, bring tears to my eyes sometimes.
And that gives me hope for, as we move through these massive changes that everybody feels on the galactic horizon, you know, that maybe when we get our focus to places like this, we can see how overcoming some of the most horrendous things imaginable is possible. And not only possible, but, you know, has been done, you know, scientific, studies and the scientific minded always say, well, the results have to be, reproducible time and time again. Well, if these people can bounce back after nuclear, you know, annihilation, firebombing, earth changes that you can't believe, you know, it's almost seems to be the epicenter of, I don't even know if there's probably a Japanese word for it. I learned it last night, but it's already escaped me. Hmm. But the fact that it keeps happening there, and they keep demonstrating over and over and over again that no matter how bad things get, you can come back from it. Which, you know, in the larger picture may be why, to a certain extent, and then that puts the solution in the rest of our laps. That once we start conducting ourselves in a similar manner, maybe, you know, some of these drastic things will lessen by our
state of consciousness.
Right. Our appreciation for those who survive and persevere, and then also, learn from. I mean, because obviously through, you know, architecture and science, you know, and let's just skip right to this part.
Sure.
What do you see from the locals as a possibility arising from this great tragedy? What's the blank canvas starting to paint? How can the Japanese build bigger and better than before after this?
Exactly. That's the big question, isn't it? You know, it's, even though the radiation thing is not a problem, I can guarantee you that. And I would urge everyone whoever you find that you kind of trust on the internet in this alternative media, write down what they're saying right now, record what they're saying, and see if they, you know, compare with what the situation is in a year from now and hold them to it. Because, you know, remember a year ago, or not even a year ago, with the Gulf of Mexico thing, there was a certain character, I think everybody will know who I'm talking about, I won't use his name, who was saying that the Gulf of Mexico was about to blow up, that it was building up a big bubble, and it was going to blow up, and everybody was going to die, and even the Earth might be split in half. And that went on for week after week. When nothing came of it, you know, almost years passed, and that person hasn't come out and apologized. And he's doing the same damn thing with this. He's saying right. It's a bunch of Nazis in control blowing up nuclear bombs, and I'm getting tired of this guy lying. And everybody knows who I'm talking about. Just because he, you know, talks well and writes books that are, if once you kind of reread them, you realize that they're a bunch of nonsense. But I will go off of my rant on that. But boy, oh boy, it really starts to piss me off. So what I see the Japanese, how they're going to come out of this is they can't go back to nuclear power. They cannot rebuild those plants. The Japanese public will not let them do it. It's not an option. But that said, they don't have enough energy to, you know, to power the country. 30% of the power source comes from nuclear power. And one other thing I want to add there is we would not have this problem if the East and the West had not been divided into two different electrical systems. I don't know if that's common knowledge over there or not. But Japan is divided into two different amperage systems. One belongs to a German setup and one to an American setup.
Right.
So if we didn't have that, the West would be able to supply us with the electricity we need up here now in the East. But they can't because it was originally set up that way about 120 years ago. Crazy, crazy.
Yeah.
So they have no choice, yeah.
I was just going to say, I think most people kind of get that because I've bought electronic devices before, like battery chargers or universal plug-ins, that you get a myriad of different types of the actual plug in case you travel abroad that,
yeah,
you know, there's some places where, you know, what we consider a plug-in to be wouldn't be a plug-in. So you're saying in Japan there's like the actual outlet in the wall, there's two different versions of that running?
Yeah, I'm not sure if the formation is different, but you cannot use, you can't, in other words, you can't transfer energy from the grid on the west side to the grid to the east side.
I see.
You know, but even in Europe, you know, they redid everything, and now, you know, the people there in France have the same power systems as the people in Germany, you know. But it was wired into the Japanese system at the initial setup time. So they're screwed that way. I think that's going to dissolve, though. I think the Japanese government is not stupid, and I think this is going to slap them in the face to say we got to get a unified power grid. But I think more than that, you know as well as I know, you would know better than I do because you've had a lot of guests on talking about free energy, that the Japanese, I have no doubt, are in possession of free energy. And this, I believe, is the time that they'll partially unveil it. I think they're going to implement free energy as the generator for their electricity, or for at least a good part of it, but not announce that to the world, you know, because you could hide that pretty easily.
Sure. Yeah, if you have – well, so, and let's talk about some of the hints as far as, you know, infrastructure that mm-hmm. may lead one to postulate that some type of energy source is at least in the works, if not being unveiled partially.
Well, they're not slowly, they're rapidly putting in the parallel to a gasoline station. They're putting in electrical stations right next to those on the major highways here at the rest areas. The biggest one is the Tomei Highway, and that's supposed to be done this year. So they wouldn't be building electrical stands unless they, you know, were pretty sure that there's going to be a big switch to electrical cars.
Right.
Right now, only Nissan has one released. It's called the Leaf. But I think they're going to make a major, huge switch over to everything being powered by electricity here very, very quickly, and not announce that the source of that is free energy.
Well, that would be exciting because in my studies, I see so many parallels between World War I and Tesla and World War II and, you know, what the Nazis were doing with power sources, on up to, you know, the Cold War. And it's some component of free energy plays a role in all of this. Because the first word there is what everybody's focused on, the energy part, the electricity. Mm-hmm. You know, if implemented correctly, that free will start to shatter paradigms that I don't think a lot of people are ready for. Profit, usury, you know, all these modes of control. Once you start reducing people's bills, for lack of a better word, you know, there's going to be this other shift into creativity and ingenuity, and not so much just profit and hoarding and consumerism. So yeah, I've often wondered why they don't just unleash it all at once.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's the only way it really could work, because if it comes out partially, that's going to entail that some people have it and some don't, obviously. And yeah, it's going to get into a money scheme again. Like you say, yeah, it's got to go out to everybody.
Exactly. And that's the trickiest part of, you know, a country trying to implement, you know, this technology, which I have no doubt. Well, and I'll just come out on the record and say it. I live 30 miles away from Whiteman Air Force Base, where they keep the stealth bomber. I played rugby in college, and we scrimmaged the Air Force team on several occasions. I have seen the stealth with my own two eyes in electrogravitic mode.
Wow.
They have maglev rail trains, magnetic levitation trains, you know, in operation today. And those are two small examples of how transportation could be radically transformed by what we would call free energy. But I urge the Japanese people to pursue, demand, or, you know, implement this. But at the same time, like you said, the oil boys, you know, the old paradigm, they don't want that. So it would also set up another, you know, target, for lack of a better word.
Yeah.
You know, and another reason to start another war. So, you know, that then brings the solution back to each of us individually, what we're willing to put up with, what we're willing to fund, you know, what we're willing to justify. So, you know, that's the good news. We have the power once again to change it or allow the change to happen. But either way, that's exciting.
Absolutely. Yeah,
I'm rooting for the Japanese people to get away from the nuclear and the oil, because I think it's possible. So
exactly. You know, then we both know that there's no doubt that it's in existence. And, you know, I would just ask people, you know, are the Japanese stupid? Do you think the Japanese are stupid? Of course not. They're not stupid people. And we have to think about how the Japanese society works. It's not based on a God is watching you type of a mentality at all. As a matter of fact, they can't even comprehend that concept. I've tried to explain, you know, my problems with how crazy I think Christianity is, but they can't even get the idea of Christianity. I explain it to them and explain it to them, and they're like, it just doesn't make sense. You know, why would some guy have to die for you to be saved? I don't get it. I'm like, well, I don't get it either. That's what I'm trying to tell you. But they don't even get it from the beginning. They've never been tainted by this, in a sense.
Right.
And what their focus is on how other humans, other people in the Japanese society view them and how they view the people. It's all human based. It's all about keeping face and not looking like an idiot when you're doing things. So when two bombs were dropped on this country, the Japanese have to get revenge. It's not something they'd like to do or they should do. They will get revenge. And they haven't forgotten about it. Not a single Japanese person here has forgotten about that, whether they're children or whatever. They know the incredible thing that happened to them. And they will get their revenge, and I think they'll get their revenge economically by blocking America and England out of the coming market, which is going to be Japan, Russia, China, India, Iraq, and Brazil. It's a done deal. You know?
Yeah,
it's just coming.
Right. Well, yeah, and as the more I learn, you see things moving in cycles or a circular fashion. You know, the universe is always seeking equilibrium. So places that have been pounded what seems like for an eternity, but in the large scheme has really just been recently, you know, even on a universal level, due for some kind of, you know, respite or payoff in their ability to keep it together. Because, like, we always hear here in the States that, you know, these Islamic extremists hate us for, you know, our freedoms. And then, you know, the Patriot movement says, mm-hmm. no, it's because we've, you know, been occupying their holy lands for, mm-hmm. you know. Okay, Japan has the most reason on the planet to hate somebody, and there's no yeah. even sniff of terrorism coming from that direction.
Yeah.
So their ability to remain composed for these last generations or two only proves that, you know, something's up on the good end for them. And I hope – let's scratch that. I don't hope. I know, too, that their payoff, you know, is right around the corner. So,
yeah, yeah. I think they'll do it without, you know, a military thing. I don't think that's the way – the mindset of the Japanese right now. But I think they're going to get that revenge done in an economic way with a lot of class, with a lot of, you know, building up a different market and just saying, sorry, you know, we're not playing ball with you anymore. You know, we've tried on your coat of Westernality for 60 years and it doesn't work. It doesn't match us.
Right.
Even I'll just say one other thing is that this has been going on for quite a few years now, the past, I'd say, 6 years or so, that the young Japanese are not looking to Hollywood. They're not looking to the Western musicians anymore. They're more interested in their own film industry and their own really cool stars they have here. And, you know, their closest neighbors, the Koreans, you know, there's a lot of exchange now between Korea and Japan, you know, culturally, people enjoying each other's rock bands and stuff. And it's like, you know, they're not interested in the nonsense of the West, the Lady Gagas and all that stuff.
Well, that's good, because less people here are becoming interested in it also. And I think the blatant, I don't even know if there's a word for it, ridiculousness of it is becoming more apparent. So, yeah, you know, like we said, changes are definitely on the galactic horizon. You know, that part of the world, you know, deserves better. And, you know, it's coming, because We tried to lead the way. We were given the chance to have, you know, that lead by example role, and, you know, we took a big dump in our pants, for lack of a better word. And yeah. So, you know, let somebody else try, and who deserving it better than, you know, those proud yet inconspicuous and hardworking Asian people that have been on the short end of the stick for, you know, a little bit far too long for my liking.
Yeah, yeah. And I would even just say, even the Japanese are so unique in that way, because they don't even really fit into Asia in a sense. They really are a unique bunch of people. They really are. You know, as John Lash explained, you know, through mythology, he's come to the very direct conclusion that there's two types of people on the planet. There's the regular humans, and there's the Japanese. It's just right. Those two types. You
right.
know, that's how different they are.
and with the trench off the coast there, you know, and even the evidence of the sunken cities.
Yeah.
You know, that would be a good spot for people to think of, you know, this ancient civilization that, you know, had some high technology in the past. That might be a good home for it, because,
yep.
you know, there's obviously earth changes in that region of the world, where there's evidence of sunken cities.
Yep.
So, that does, you know, lend credence to the fact that, you know, this might be a separate, not only mindset, but, you know, people in general, because, you know, though they are close to what we call Asia, they're not Oriental per se. And,
right.
And, you know, they're not, I can't even think of the scientific name for the Mongolian type, you know, farther to the north, or yeah. even the Inuit type that would be a close relative in, you know, the northern parts of America.
Right.
But and before we move past that, let's
sure.
explain who John Lamb Lash is, if somebody doesn't know.
Well, he's considered the you know, the world's most well-recognized and most profound comparative mythologist. which is something, it's a area of study that there's usually only about 10 real qualified comparative mythologists at any one time in the world, because, you know, it's one of the most difficult studies. You have to be well versed in all of the myths of all of the cultures of all times to be able to compare them, you know, obviously. And you know, his most famous work is Not in His Image, where he exposes the dangers of Christianity. He compares it to a virus,
right?
And talks about the Gnostics, yeah,
Judaism and Islam as well. The Abrahamic face with the Redeemer aspect of those common memes in those mythos.
Exactly, yeah, the Abrahamic religions, you know, and the dangers that are inherent in that. As soon as a country adopts or a group of people adopts those principles, you know, you're pretty much screwed. I mean, you're in for some very troubling mental problems that are going to stem from that. And once it's pointed out to you, it makes perfect sense. You see it. And that's where I tip my hat to the first great shogun here in Japan, Tokugawa Ieyasu, who unified the country in 1602. You know, the first thing he did was block out any foreign intervention for 252 years. And the reason he did it was to stop the spread of Christianity from coming into his country. You think about the intelligence of that man.
Right.
His ability to foresee things. It just absolutely boggles the mind.
And to break it down to the building block there, the meme these Abrahamic religions have in common is it takes the power from the internal perspective and puts it external in a variety of ways. You're powerless because, you know, you've got a redeemer on the way or an angry, judgmental God. Instead of that being an internal function of how do I conduct myself in the most positive manner,
right?
It shifts that power away from the individual. And a shogun from 400 and so many years ago could see that these religions, you know, forget the Bible and you know, the people themselves. The focus takes your spiritual power from an internal perspective and places it out there in the heavens somewhere.
Exactly. And it's a male God, you know, the female is erased from the picture, you know.
Even when I was a little twerp, I used to wonder, you know, women give birth and, you know, the female animals give birth and fruits are female. And then you're like, but no, the entity that created everything is actually male. Even though you can physically observe the female, you know, energies bringing forth life, in your case, it was a guy. You'd be like, no, I came out of my mom. I'm pretty sure about that.
Yeah. It just doesn't make sense from whichever perspective you look at it. And, you know, that's one of the great things about John Lash. I would say the two greatest things that he's done and that he is still doing is he's the first person to retell the Sophia myth, you know, the creation of this planet. How did it come about? What is it? You know, what is our place in it? And he's the one that reconstructed that from the Nag Hammadi codices that were found in 1945. And when you get acquainted with the Sophia myth, that is the most powerful tale, the most powerful story that you can implement into your mind around. It's very important key. So there's that. And then what he's doing now, what he started about a year and a half ago, which is a planetary tantra, which is what I'm really involved in with John and helping him to tell this and get the information out about it. This is where it gets exciting.
Absolutely.
Testable. Yeah.
And that's, you know, a multiple hour conversation right there.
Yeah.
But before we move past that point, let's plug where people can hear those because they are very powerful. John Lamb Lash is not only a scholar, but a thinker because, like you said, the comparative mythologies, he's not a Gnostic proponent, so he's going to try and fit his whole worldview into that. He's compared all of these from a scholarly perspective, the pros and cons of each. And then when you see, you know, what we consider the Abrahamic religions compared to what the Nag Hammadi call the Sophia myth in the creation of Earth itself. It's startling and fascinating, and then the implications are profound, to say the least. And that's where you come into the picture, because you and he are working on one aspect of that profundity in a thing called planetary tantra. And where can people go to hear, you know, not only that, but more of the work you've done with John Lamb Lash?
Well, it's an ongoing thing. And if you just go to Blog Talk Radio and do a search for Grok the Talk, and put that in the search button, you'll find where I'm posting these interviews. And we're trying to do one every new moon, full moon, and you know, so basically every 2 weeks. And we're just going to keep going on them until we've got enough of the information out for this to grow into a self-perpetuating group of people. And I tell you, the information that he's providing for myself and some people that are connected into this initial parts of it, it's just mind-boggling. It's so deep. It's so incredible. And it's so testable. Everything he talks about, you can verify it yourself.
Absolutely. And I don't want to spoil it for folks, but I suggest they go back. You know, don't listen to the newest one first. And actually even go listen to the few interviews you have before the Planetary Tantra talks start.
Right.
And if you listen to this progression and then encapsulate that into, you know, events that have transpired since those talks began. If you don't see the correlation, then with all due respect, go back to Fulford and American Idol and all that stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
Because you're right. It's you know, evidence or proof, you know, experience is the ultimate truth, like I always say. And if one can't derive the correlation between the talks and what's going on currently, not only with you personally, Japan bigger, and then the world in general, you know, like I said, it might not be for you, but Grok the Talk on Blog Talk. I'll definitely have a link under the interview to that and even John Lamb Lash's site, which is metahistory.org, I believe.
Yep.
And it's, you know, if people want solutions and where to put our focus, you know, this is a good place to start, because another thing I always come across is, well, if, you know, all this conspiracy stuff is real, then who's behind it? And I think that who part needs to be examined, because though we're not talking about little green men, I think ultimately we can derive that this is a non-human intelligence of sorts. Yep. And Mr. Lash has done a fantastic job of not only explaining that, but fitting it into some of the most ancient and, you know, survivable documents that you know, that are around today.
Exactly, because the Gnostics were not a bunch of dummies. These are the, you know, the mystics of our past. These are the people that, you know, were behind the mystery schools. And forget about the bad images you have about mystery schools. They're not places to promote the Illuminati and all this nonsense. That's not what went on in mystery schools. And, you know, they warned us about the archons and the influence of these inorganic beings that were formulated through an accident as Sophia made her way out to meet, you know, the creation that she had worked on in the center of the galaxy, the Anthropos. So he warns a lot, or they warned a lot about the archons. That was a huge subject that they talked about in their writings and in their classes. And the great thing about what John is doing, and it's kind of reflects on this idea that, you know, you're going to find the real and you're going to find the copy, the inauthentic thing. And what Benjamin Fulford did, the idea is brilliant. It really is, you know, pinpointing the top of the head of the snake and taking these guys out. The problem is that he's not doing it. And
right.
He's not going to do it. It's just a story. But that's where what's going on with John comes in, is he's very carefully found this part of the problem, which is the interspecies predators. In other words, you know, a certain percentage of our population are deviants, psychopaths that are feeding off of us. And we can't shower them with love and expect them to stop doing it. The only answer now is to pull up big time, get serious about this, and attack these guys, take them down. And I've put my life on the line in the sense of saying, I'm putting my name right with it. I'm declaring war on these people. I'm not backing down. And part of what's going on with Planetary Tantra is we're going to have to design a Gaian, martial art. Train right. some people, and we're going to have to take them down. And this is, I don't care if I'm talking about violence. That's what I'm talking about. They're going down, period.
Because we can see the detrimental influence, from, recorded history till now of, and people want to say it's the Masons or the Illuminati, or the Satanic Brotherhood, whatever. But we all know that something very sinister has been, I don't even like the word in charge, but, pushing humanity mm-hmm. around for the longest exactly. of times. And through that, we've had umpteen religions and technologies and forms of government. And this interspecies parasite, however one wants to define that, has been plaguing, the beauty of the human race since then. And, something needs to be done because our vain attempts of the last millennia are not working. So a fresh take and a fresh approach at the very yep. least needs to be considered.
Well, yeah, and think about it. I mean, this really, it's the most simple, obvious route to go. In nature, if somebody, if some animal attacks another animal, that mother or father, that's having his children attacked is going to tear that thing apart. And that's, nobody's going to blame them for it. That's, the most natural response. So now that we know that these people are screwing things up, I mean, if you don't realize it by now, then just forget about it. You're never going to see it, and that's really too bad that there are some people like that still. But we know who they are. We have their addresses. There can't be more than 10,000 of them. We get 2,000 people, highly trained, samurai style people. And I know how to train people in that. And at least I'm going to work on ways to do this. I would say within a couple of years, we can have 2,000 people trained and ready to go. And once the go-ahead signal goes, we'll just go kamikaze all the way. A lot of us will lose our lives doing it, but what a great way to go,
Absolutely.
I'd much rather do that than die in a hospital somewhere.
Right.
And that's the way we're going.
And these people are good at camouflage. And I've often considered, I'll just say it. I've thought of a way to get them out from under their camouflage tents, and it's quite simple. It's
cool.
It's,
I want to hear that.
No, yeah, it's basically my IRS plan, to say the very least. There's a multitude of arenas that people want to get into, legal battles, for lack of a better phrase. But I think if a small fraction of what we call the truth movement out and out refuse to comply. And I'm talking about no more paying, don't answer the phone, throw their letters in the trash, ignore their summons. Mm-hmm. If a small fraction of the truth movement did that, you would see real quickly the scum rise to the top, because that our consent is the basis for these illegal wars and the chemtrailing in the skies and the subjugation of third world populations and the profuse usury that's plagued everywhere. That is all constituted literally on our voluntary, in air quotes, paying them, whether it's taken out of your check or one big lump payment on the 15th, if just a few million people refused and withdrew mm-hmm. from that altogether, you would see, the IRS yep. has 101,253, I think, employees in total. Hmm. They physically couldn't.
That's right.
Audit, sue and take to court multiple millions of people, which sounds like a lot, but in actuality is very few.
Yeah.
So we could throw a monkey wrench in this thing. Would it solve the world's problems immediately? No. But like I said, you would see those hiding in camouflage come out really quick mm-hmm. if they thought their compliance or their future revenue streams were in jeopardy. And then if people who knew what they were doing, were awake and aware, because, you know, we hear about underground bases and, you know, space platforms.
Yeah.
They claim to look for Osama. They're peeking in every cave over there. You know, identifying these people, you know, on a real time basis would be difficult. But if they thought their funding stream was in serious jeopardy, they would alert their positions immediately.
Yeah, they would start heading for their little hideouts. And then I got to just sit on the hideouts and starve them out or do whatever
exactly.
You want
to do. And if they happened to make it to the hideout before, you know, somebody got there, that would be a good place to set up dojos and, you know,
yep.
training centers, you know,
Yeah, they're freaking out, I think. I think they have a good scent for the change that's going on, and I think they're freaking out. They're making their escape plans, and they realize there's no place to go. Because you know as well as I do that they never went to the moon, so they're not getting off the planet. I don't believe any of that crap. I don't believe in any of it. I don't think we ever went to the moon. I don't think we can get to the moon, at least for hundreds of years. I believe there's some things that we don't really understand about our need to be here on the biosphere. We just can't survive, you know, getting through the Van Allen belts and all that. So I don't think they're escaping like some of these, you know, international Nazi promoter science fiction writers who claim to be from Oxford University and all this crap that I don't believe at all.
Right.
And I think you know who I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I don't.
I don't believe any of that anymore. It's all a bunch of science fiction nonsense. Forget it.
Yeah, I wouldn't put it past to have a space station in low Earth orbit, but right, as far as an already built, you know, base on Mars or even the backside of the moon, there couldn't be, you know, some kind of life already out there, but I don't think it's us headed that way.
No, not at all. Not at all. I mean, if you, Jacob, if you were a bad guy and you wanted to escape, you know, would you go up into a space station? It'd freak you out. You'd be scared to death to go up on a space station. Be like, when can I come back?
Right.
What happens if they get up there and they cut me off, you know? They wouldn't go there. They're not going to go underground. They know if they go underground, that's the worst place to be if there's an earthquake or a flood or whatever. They're really screwed. And so they're just going to have to be thrown in jail or have their heads cut off. That's all that's left for them.
And like my profile picture everybody loves, the beginning is near.
I love that. Yeah, that is. That's great. It is. It's started and we're right. I think we're almost towards the end of the end in a sense.
So and I know it's getting late where you're at and it's getting early where I'm at. Just to kind of put a nice little bow on this.
Sure.
When things like this happen, and you know, and I think people forget earthquakes have happened since the Earth, so these aren't new phenomena. You know, whether you know, people have devices that can trigger them, the sun plays a role, mm-hmm. the Earth is expanding. However this goes, it goes, and we need to learn from it. You know, the earthquake itself, the hype and fear that's generated from it. You know, there's a million things we need to learn from it. So this one happened. It was a big one. It was a doozy. Lots of people did die. But as can be testified to all the previous earthquakes, none of them in the world. So these aren't, you know, the assessment of all life events. They are something to be dealt with. So you guys have survived. Nobody's glowing in the dark.
Nope.
We can testify to the fact that lots of people like to hype events like this to freak people out for whatever reason.
Uh-huh.
And since there are millions of people that live there, if somebody were truly concerned, the best thing to do would be to find one and ask them, are you glowing in the dark? Are things okay? Is there anything I can do from Mid Missouri to help? You know, instead of, you know, buying overpriced potassium iodide pills and, mm-hmm. you know, writing your death poem, there's actually constructive things that can be done. And so with my new focus here in going and finding others, you know, I don't want to convert the mainstream, lamestream, you know, TV head to, you know, what reality really is or what we deem the truth movement. I want to find others who are of similar mindset, you know, have big picture conversations, promote the things they're doing, you know, and if one of them happens to live in an area that just got hit by an earthquake, let's talk about, you know, how that comes, you know, because what did we learn? There are subtle energy changes that if people are in tune to, they can, you know, become more and more aware of. And if you're in that mindset and you have friends around you in that mindset and enough of you go, hey, I kind of feel weird today. You know, and if a small group of people all noticed and were paying attention to that subtlety, could communicate that with others around them, yep. You know, predicting this thing telepathically isn't out of the question because
– not at all. Yeah. I agree.
You know, it's there. You know, when we see things like nuclear energy plants being destroyed, you know, that is not to be taken lightly. But, you know, that's also, you know, another opportunity for the free energy. I mean, because like I tell people, do you have a refrigerator magnet? And they go, yeah. And I go, well, how often do you change the batteries? And they're like, well, never. You know, magnets don't take batteries.
Yep.
So that energy is there. You know, the planet is spinning and has been for a long time. You know, I've never seen an extension cord in any of these space photos. So,
yeah,
you know, this planet's twirling somehow. You know, these yep. refrigerator magnets work somehow. You know, my cells divide all the time. I've cut myself in regenerated skin. You know, mm-hmm. I'm not plugged into the wall. So this energy is all around all the time.
Yeah, it's the norm. The whole. Everything that we observe in nature is working on free energy.
So every time one of these dastardly things happen and our old ways of thinking are crushed, we need to see the opportunity for new ways of thinking. And again, I can't get past the fact that these things keep happening in Japan, and Japan comes back bigger and stronger, you know, kind of as a teaching tool for the rest of us that, you know, Earth changes aren't the end of the world. There's a way to survive anything, you know, and that's probably why the island's so darn beautiful. You know, people would put up with 9.0s and tsunamis to live there. So,
absolutely. You know, I just everything about this country, I just absolutely am in love with. And you know, you see the pride of the Japanese. They don't want to go anywhere. I think what they really want is just to be left alone. I think in the heart of all Japanese, they just want to be left alone to be Japanese and stop being bothered with by the rest of the world. You know, they don't understand how the rest of the world is just always freaking out all the time. It doesn't make sense to them.
Absolutely. And instead of exploiting situations, let's, you know, as the small guy, quote unquote, that, you know, we seem to be, we can learn from this. And how can I as an individual incorporate some of the mindset that these people tend to have? Yeah. You know, not everybody can up and move to Japan. It's not about
sure.
that.
And you don't need to. Yeah, exactly. It's mindset. Yeah.
Taking that essence to where we are locally and finding the others, you know. So it's all in all been a fascinating conversation, you know, and I again implore everybody to look into the work Thomas is doing, not only with John Lamb Lash, but other interviews that he has on his channel. And again, I'll have all that linked up. Is there anything else you wanted to say about John Lamb Lash, Planetary Tantra, or, you know, this? Well, like I said, if people listen to these shows as a progression and then put it in context with what's gone on, you know, it should make a whole lot of sense. But, like, you know, that's multiple hours worth of audio
exactly.
that people should definitely listen to. So was there anything else you wanted to say about that?
Well, I think you're right. Yeah, it would be really – it'd probably just kind of – confuse things for me to try to explain what's going on with Planetary Tantra, and just say the best thing is just go ahead and listen to them from the beginning, like Jacob said. And I think there's going to be a sizable amount of people that are going to tune into it and really, really see the value and the importance of this. And on a different note, I would just say if you want to kind of see what the Japanese mentality, the core, what it's really about, go to your DVD rental store and get a movie called Sanjuro, which is a Kurosawa movie. Watch the first 12 minutes of that movie. Even if you don't understand the Japanese, just watch it. And you will see the incredible mentality of the hero there, of Mifune, and how he deals with 100 samurai that are coming to kill him in the nighttime. You watch that, and if that doesn't get you pumped up with the incredibleness of the samurai, you know, nothing will. Amazing stuff. Or anything Kurosawa does, you should watch. No doubt about it.
Well, that's a lot of things people can look forward to. Your talks with Lash and that movie as well. Is there anything else you wanted to say about the earthquake, the tsunami, and or the media ridiculousness that ensued?
I would just say that, yeah, what I was saying at the beginning is just stop the hysteria. No one in Japan's buying it. You're just the media is just making themselves look stupid. And I think the Japanese their eyes have really been awakened now. I think they've seen the level of the insanity that's exists on the other side of the ocean, whichever way you go from Japan. And I think we're going to see a huge shift away from the thinking of the West, and the Japanese are going to side much more with China and Russia in the ensuing years. And so that's about all I would add there on that.
And even, you know, everybody's convinced the mainstream media has lost their minds. You know, that's not to say that everybody that's not in the mainstream media, you know, that's it's kind of mm-hmm. like, you know, what fruits they bear. You know, there's an undercurrent that no matter what channel somebody works for or website they're promoting, if it's hype and hysteria and no reality to their basis, you know, it's time to, I think, just ignore them. I don't think they need to be fought or ridiculed. You know, it's just, like I say, go find the others. Let's find people who are local that have the information and ask them what's up. It's kind of that simple. You know, people's like, well, MSNBC and then Fox is saying this and Benjamin Fulford's saying this. Do you know anybody in Japan you could just go ask? And, you know, instead of juggling these, you know, people that don't live there, you know, it's kind of a simple solution in that regard, because I see everywhere, you know, these range of reports from, you know, it boggles the mind. It's like, have any of you just asked anybody there what's up? Oh, no, I looked at some website that referenced HARP data and, you know, that's not going to get us anywhere. Finding the others is. So I'm glad you took the time to sit down with us.
Sure, sure. Because you're not going to see the Japanese, you know, coming out and trying to tell the world what's going on. That's not their character. They won't do it. They don't toot their own horn, and, you know, they just assume that the rest of the world is going to educate themselves instead of following the hysteria.
Which is a good teaching tool for all of us, because, like I said, that's what those of us not in that zone can do and learn from this, is that, you know, everything's overcomable, if that's a word, if you put your mind to it.
Yep, I agree.
Thanks a bunch for your time, and I'll let you get back to it.
Okay.
Have a good night.
All right. Good night, Jacob. Bye.